Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Tuesday, December 11th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. It's decision day for a long-debated ordinance on whether dogs should be allowed on a new city ball field. At its regular meeting tonight, the Sitka Assembly will consider whether to ban dogs from Mahler Park. The baseball diamond at Mahler was rebuilt this fall and now features artificial turf. Dog waste and behaviors such as digging could damage that turf. The city is proposing a $300 fine for owners who let their dogs onto the field. Service animals are exempt. Also tonight, the Assembly will consider whether to stiffen penalties for people whose trash cans attract bears. Up until now, police have issued mandatory warnings on the first offense. If the Assembly approves tonight's measure, authorities could immediately write a ticket. The fine would be $150 for a first offense and $300 for a second offense. The tougher stand on trash is meant to address problems Sitka is experiencing with bears getting into neighborhoods. They often attracted to town by food waste and other smelly waste. The Assembly meets tonight at 5 p.m. for a work session on the Blue Lake Hydro Project. Raven Radio will join live coverage when the regular meeting convenes 1 hour later at 6 p.m. Folks doing their holiday shopping in downtown Sitka can enter a contest to guess the number of lights on a tree in front of St. Michael's Orthodox Cathedral. They'll also be able to gaze at the Christmas village in a window of a closed storefront that ordinarily is dark all winter. Little changes like these are the start of what a committed group of Sitkans hopes is something bigger, a more visitor-friendly town for residents. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Stephanie Brenner owns a clothing store on Lincoln Street in Sitka. She's been in business for a long time. Brenner says shopping local is an important part of revitalization, but it's not the only thing.
I think when you work downtown, you really have a sense of the people in the downtown and the community downtown. And I have a personal interest in it as well as financial, but you're just vested in the community.
Brenner is one of about 50 Sitkans who attended a downtown revitalization meeting in October after the Sitka Health Summit chose the issue as one of its three goals for the year. The Health Summit is a collaboration of healthcare organizations and social service agencies, businesses, and professionals who meet annually to set attainable goals for improving health and wellness in the community. Recent projects have been designing and painting a mural in response to the high domestic violence rate and making Sitka the first officially recognized bicycle-friendly community in the state. Angela McGraw works at Sitka Community Hospital. She attended the summit and was immediately drawn to the idea of reimagining downtown Sitka.
The big thing is also the locals and making it important for us and making it viable for us.
There have already been two well-attended meetings on downtown revitalization and some action. A garden nursery owner has donated lighted trees. A store that usually closes up for the winter has a Christmas village installed in its window. And downtown merchants are organizing a contest to guess the number of lights decorating the Christmas tree in front of St. Michael's Orthodox Cathedral. McGraw says this is all part of a larger vision.
We find these things that we can start with small, and it doesn't mean we aren't looking bigger. It's just sometimes we want to know what we can do and feel like we've accomplished something.
The group has one landscape architect on board and is looking past the holidays towards some urban planning. There have been proposals in the past to make downtown Sitka more accommodating to tourists. Stephanie Brenner says this new idea is about us.
I really think that we're on the brink of, you know, really making our downtown what we would like it to be. And we, you know, I think people have spoken, they'd like it to be more pedestrian friendly. Mm-hmm. We'd like to encourage, you know, maybe more bicycle racks or more areas for people to congregate and to bring their kids downtown.
Ideas that emerge at the Health Summit have a pretty high success rate because of the emphasis on attainability and the limited duration. Some ideas, however, like food security and a fish-to-schools program, have gained momentum all their own. Brenner hopes downtown revitalization is one of them.
I just think that there's enough people that are passionate about this, and I don't see their passion dying out. There are people that are new to this community. There's people that have been here for years. And I think that there's people that really do want to see a change. And I really feel that if you don't try, you don't know what's going to happen.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Downtown Revitalization Work Group will hold its next meeting at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, December 12th, upstairs in the Sitka Lutheran Church. The group has a Facebook page with their objectives and meeting times. Find the link on our website, kcaw.org. Low forecasts for next year's Stikine and Taku River King salmon returns will mean no opportunity for commercial fishing fleets to target those king runs early next May. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game this month released its forecasts for Chinook expected to return to the two rivers in southeast Alaska next spring and summer. Ed Jones oversees the region's Chinook and Coho projects for the Department of Fish and Game's Sport Fishing Division.
In the Taku and Stikine, these are some of the lowest runs we've seen, or lowest forecasts we've seen in recent 15-year period. And that's essentially as long as we've been doing them. So they're about as bad as we've seen. And across the board, in southeast Alaska, the escapements we saw in 2012 were as bad as we've seen them since the mid-1970s. So we are definitely in a period of poor production.
Escapements are the adult fish returning from the ocean and reaching their spawning grounds. For the Stikine River near Wrangell, the department produced a forecast for 32,000 kings, but then reduced that by 30% down to 22,400 kings. Fish and Game's preseason forecast has overestimated the run size for the past 6 years. For the past 5 years, the forecast has been over by an average of 32% from the actual run size each year.
If you look back, we've been doing these forecasts for both rivers since the mid-90s. And if you look back through the data set, you can see that the forecasts tend to be underperforming, where we're under forecast for a number of years, and then we'll over forecast for a number of years. And the general consensus on the street is that it's mostly due to marine survival or marine conditions. Mother Nature is either being very favorable to the stock for a period of years, and then it switches the other direction where Mother Nature isn't. And that's the period of production that we're in right now. Forecasts are generally overestimating the run sizes at the present time.
The size of the expected king run is not enough to allow directed fisheries near the Stikine early next May. Trawlers and gill netters had a limited shot at those Stikine kings last May for the first time since 2008. However, gill netters, the fisheries was closed due to low catches. The fishery is managed in season, meaning if stronger runs show up, it could be opened later next May. Meanwhile, the department says it's unlikely any king openings will happen in District 11 for the Taku River near Juneau in 2013. The forecast there is just over 26,000 fish, also too low to allow for a commercial catch. Low king numbers are not just a problem on the two rivers. Jones says something is happening up and down the coast to Chinook ocean survival.
You know, I've been getting calls. People think that the reason we're not getting fish in the Taku and Stikine is because we had directed fisheries start up in 2005, 2006. You know, had some pretty good fisheries. But, you know, the escapements that we've managed to maintain over these years have been right in the range that produce adequate number of juveniles, and ideally a good number of adults coming back. The problem has been Mother Nature. The production has taken a downward turn, and, you know, you can't blame the directed fisheries in the Taku for the reason why fish aren't returning to the Chilkat or to the Nass River in British Columbia. You know, this is a coast-wide event right now.
Fisheries that target salmon on the two transboundary rivers are managed under the Pacific Salmon Treaty between the U.S. and Canada. Plans for a 29-mile pipeline underneath Cook Inlet were announced last week in Anchorage. Cook Inlet Energy, one of the many new players in the area, is the company applying for the right-of-way lease from the Department of Natural Resources. As KDLL's Shaylin Cochran reports, an underwater pipeline would solve several problems for Cook Inlet oil producers, but create others, primarily for environmentalists and others concerned by the prospect of an underwater spill.
First, the pipeline. A 29-mile horseshoe-shaped 8-inch line from Cook Inlet Energy's Kustatan production facility on West Foreland Point, directly across the inlet from Nikiski, will travel south for several miles to avoid deep trenches and fast currents, and finally connect at the Tesoro refinery in Nikiski. The line's maximum depth will be 200 feet, according to CIE's project description, which also describes the project's purpose as necessary to, quote, bypass the aging infrastructure on the west side of Cook Inlet to eliminate risk of volcanic activity and ice movements to oil shipments. That's been the main reason people have been pushing for a pipeline since Mount Redoubt erupted last in 2009, exposing the risks associated with the nearby Drift River storage terminal. With its storage capacity compromised after that eruption, tanker traffic in the inlet increased to keep production moving from one side of the inlet to the other. This summer, the Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council, or CIRCAC, released a position paper in support of a pipeline, which CIRCAC Executive Director Michael Munger said at the time would be much easier to manage in the event of a disaster or spill.
One of the studies that's being done within the Cook Inlet Risk Assessment points towards, if there is going to be an accident in Cook Inlet and marine vessel traffic, the highest environmental risk is tanker traffic. And so we'd like to see them get out of that system. But again, ultimately, what we'd like to see is the pipeline installed. We feel a five-year time frame is a reasonable time to get the studies done and the engineering done to get this installed.
They might not have to wait that long. Construction is scheduled for April through August of 2014. The line will have the capacity to carry up to 90,000 barrels of oil per day. Cook Inlet oil production was about 10,000 barrels per day in 2011. Hillcorp, who operates the Drift River Storage Terminal, could be one of the companies to benefit from the lowered costs of production anticipated to come with the new pipeline. Hillcorp spokesperson Lori Nelson told the Peninsula Clarion Wednesday that there are too many ifs right now to speculate on any agreement, but that they encourage CIE's success on the project. While the pipeline mitigates the potential for oil spills in an increasingly busy production center, environmentalists and others still have plenty of concerns. Bob Shavelson is the director of advocacy for the Cook Inlet Keeper. A pipeline has been on their wish list for some time. Despite what a pipeline might mean for tanker travel in the inlet, he says regulations here still lag behind other parts of the state.
And that's all for Raven News. If you missed any of our stories or like to hear them again, visit us online, kcaw.org.